The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Don't forget, if you'd like to email the program, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. As the week unfolds, we'll try to get to quite a few more of those comments that keep coming in. Lots of good ones coming in from you listeners. Well, 69% of Americans now say that race relations are bad in the United States. That's what an overwhelming majority of Americans now conclude. This is the highest level of discord that we've seen since the Rodney King case in 1992. And of course, as you know, from the last couple of years, relations between the black community in America and the police are so bad that after the murder of those five police officers in Dallas earlier this year, I think it was in early July, more than half of black people said that they weren't surprised by the attack. And quite a few white people said the same thing. As shocking, as appalling as it was, so many people weren't surprised because of the climate, because of the division, because of the racial discord. That's life in America in 2016. And you compare that with what it was like at the end of 2008, coming into the start of Barack Obama's presidency, or just the way that many people felt back then. 70%. This is from a Gallup poll from late 2008. 70% of Americans thought that Barack Obama's presidency would help race relations. That's an overwhelming majority. They thought, well, he's our first black president. Surely this will help race relations. And the media, of course, they were just heaping praise on him and his presidency early on. Well, they've continued with that. Even as we've seen all of this racial discord and division. And if you look at the last 8 years, honestly, well, you see that this administration that was supposed to make everything better has really done more to poison race relations than any administration in the modern era, certainly since the civil rights movement. It didn't take long for President Obama to weigh in on just about every incident involving race. July 2009, after that Cambridge police officer arrested a black professor for disorderly conduct. Well before the evidence came in of what actually happened there, President Obama went to the media and said, hey, the Cambridge police acted stupidly. The police are stupid in this case. And then he went on to wax eloquent on the subject of race, saying that there's a long history in America of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. That's what he said in July 2009, and of course, many, many people in law enforcement were very disturbed by these comments, rushing to the defense of this professor, slandering the police, inserting himself, the President of the United States, right into the middle of this controversy, even before the facts came in. You're probably well familiar with the Trayvon Martin case in 2012 and the shooting there with the Neighborhood Watch volunteer. And then President Obama immediately commenting on that case, saying that if he had a son, he'd look just like Trayvon Martin. He said, Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And you know how the media created this false narrative right from the start. And then the facts came out much later, long after all of those provocative comments by the President of the United States. The same scenario played out in August 2014 when a white police officer killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Here again, the case hadn't yet gone to court. The facts hadn't yet been gathered. And once again, the President of the United States publicly criticized the police, accused the police of bullying people, bullying journalists. All these instances, all of these cases, well, once the evidence came in, it proved that in every single case, the American president was just flat out wrong. There's no other way to say it. He was on the wrong side in all of these cases. And these provocative comments from him and from those in his administration, and they only helped to inflame tensions between whites and blacks and to increase tensions and distrust between blacks and law enforcement. And yet still the agenda continued. It pressed forward, even with the Freddie Gray case in 2015. That drug dealer that was brought into police custody. And then, of course, he dies while in custody, and the city of Baltimore goes up in flames. And again, the President of the United States rushes to the microphone and says, some police aren't doing the right thing here. They're not doing the right thing. He talked about a decades-old, slow-rolling crisis that was responsible for all of this tension between the police and the black community. I mean, this has been going on for decades, and we've got to address it. You look at all these cases, and now almost 8 years in, I mean, there's quite a few of them that have piled up. And every time this administration weighs in or intervenes in a racially charged dispute, it ends up making the problem worse. It just adds fuel to the fire. In my father's new booklet, Great Again, he says this in chapter 5, it would be overstating it to say there is no racism among America's law enforcement officers, but there are some who are scrutinizing and magnifying this issue for evil purposes. Yes, there are. There are some that are looking for every possible mistake, and they're looking for them for evil purposes. They're using it dishonestly, it says, to explain or excuse some terrifyingly dangerous behavior. They're stirring up emotion and anger. But none of it is truly intended to solve the problem. Now, that's just been the history these past 8 years. That's what we've seen from this administration. Provocative rhetoric that has stirred up racial division and strife. All of these case studies, as I went through there, the latest, that Freddie Gray case in April 2015, and then it was just 2 months after that. 2 months after, again getting it wrong on Freddie Gray, that President Obama, he went on a program and then said some more provocative statements about racism in the United States. This is from an ABC report following his interview with some, I forget what podcast it was, but this is ABC reporting on it, clip number 10.
President Obama used the N-word as he invoked the long history of racism in America from slavery to Jim Crow that he says still casts a long shadow over America.
That's still part of our DNA. That's passed on. We're not cured of it.
Racism.
We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not.
Those are especially blunt words for a president who has had to address the issue of race over and over again.
That happened in June 2015, just a little over a year ago. I mean, saying racism is embedded into the DNA of whites and that it just passes on by DNA, saying that is in itself a racist statement. But as we now know, well, we've known this for some time, he gets a free pass like so many others on the left, and particularly in the minority communities, because they're minorities. It's whites that we have to be worried about. It's the white majority that we have to be worried about. And now we see or hear this same message. It's amplified now with the election of Donald Trump. The white majority. What did Van Jones say last week? White lash. That's what this election is all about. It's about angry whites lashing back. This is a white lash against a black president. That's what Van Jones said. And Van Jones, he used to work in the Obama administration. And that comment that he made last week, well, that's just, it springs from that statement or that thinking that motivated the statement of President Obama in 2015. It's in the DNA, don't you know? Van Jones, by the way, I mentioned he worked for the Obama administration, and then after that, it was a nice, smooth transition right over to CNN. One and the same, really. And there he was on election night. And that was the unbelievably provocative rhetoric coming from the far left on election night. But because it was from the far left media sees it as, well, this is just normal. There's nothing provocative about the statement Van Jones made. I mean, it's a centrist statement. It's right in the middle, because we're the media, and we're right in the middle. We're objective. And so one of their own makes a statement like that, and nobody thinks really anything of it. Nobody challenged him on that panel. Not even the conservative side, not even the Republican side would challenge him when he was on that panel the hours following the election last week. Yesterday, President Obama held a press conference prior to his last foreign trip as President of the United States. He came out and said, well, I know you have a lot of questions with all that's happened over the last week, and he wanted to, as he said, clear some of the brush before he headed off to other nations and held press conferences abroad. And so he spoke with the press for about an hour yesterday. And during the exchanges he had with the media, the president revealed some of the details that he had, or rather from his discussion that he had with President-elect Trump last Thursday, I believe it was. This is clip one from yesterday's press conference.
I did say to him, as I've said publicly, that because of the nature of the campaigns and the bitterness and ferocity of the campaigns, that it's really important to try to send some signals of unity and to reach out to minority groups or women or others that were concerned about the tenor of the campaign.
The way President Obama sees it now with a new administration coming in, I mean, the signals that President Trump or President-elect Trump, the signals are very important. He needs to be reaching out to minority groups. Minority groups that were concerned about his rhetoric, some of the things he has said That's very important, that you come into office and you establish the right tone, especially coming off a very difficult and in some cases a ferocious and bitter campaign. And, of course, we can't very well argue with him on that point. But here is President Obama, of all people, lecturing Donald Trump about rhetoric, about what to say and what not to say. He continued in this same conference, clip two.
What I also discussed was the fact that I had been encouraged by his statements on election night about the need for unity and his interest in being the president for all people, and that how he staffs, the first steps he takes, the first impressions he makes, the reset that can happen after an election, all those things are important and should be thought about. And I think it's important to give him the room and the space to do that. It takes time to put that together. But I emphasized to him that, look, in a election like this that was so hotly contested and so divided, gestures matter. And how he reaches out to groups that may not have supported him, how he signals his interest in their issues or concerns. I think those are the kinds of things that can set a tone that will help move things forward once he's actually taken office.
Again, it's incredible hearing this particular president speak of the importance of what leaders say and the tone that they set, particularly when you look at his presidency and also the lead up to his presidency, that period we're now in with Donald Trump. Not long after Barack Obama kicked off his presidential run back in, I think it was late 2006, early 2007, Rolling Stone featured this this article on the radical roots of Barack Obama. That's going back to February 2007. And in that that particular article, it talks about all of these troubling associations that Barack Obama had with extremists like Jeremiah Wright, who had been Barack Obama's spiritual mentor for 20 years. And this is from the left-wing Rolling Stone magazine. That article said, this is, speaking of Barack Obama, this is as openly radical a background as any significant American political figure has ever emerged from. I mean, back then it was even for the Rolling Stone, it was shocking. Today, not so much. I mean, it's 2016, and I mean, he's the elder statesman. He's the one that speaks in relatively soft tones, even though when you actually look at the words, when you actually hear the words, talk about provocative. Rolling Stone said, look, Jeremiah Wright was not an incidental figure in Obama's life or in his politics. That's the Rolling Stone writing at a time when it probably thought, well, there's no way Barack Obama's ever going to be president. Even if it hoped that he would. Jeremiah Wright is not an incidental figure in Obama's life or even in his politics. The article said, if you want to understand where Barack Obama gets his feeling and rhetoric from, just look at Jeremiah Wright. Just go to his spiritual mentor. Just go to his pastor that he followed for some two decades. And Rolling Stone says, look, it wasn't like someone went and dragged President Obama or Barack Obama into Trinity United, the church of Jeremiah Wright. Mr. Obama chose that church. He picked Jeremiah Wright. The piece says, this is Rolling Stone, when you read his autobiography, that's talking about Barack Obama's autobiography, the surprising thing for such a measured politician is the depth of radical feeling that seeps through the amount of Jeremiah Wright that's packed in there. Now, all of this, of course, was written before, about a year before, President Obama's or Barack Obama's relationship with Wright became so controversial, and that's when the campaign was really going strong, and he was rising or gaining popularity. And you probably remember some of the details. He came out at first and strongly defended his pastor, even after these statements, these radical, extremist, racist statements were receiving a lot of publicity. That was back in early 2008. And then finally, because of politics, the senator, then senator, had to finally come forward and disown him after all of those years. Talk about a troubling association. That's just one of them. You could study more into Rashid Khalidi, if you like. The one who, was a defender of Yasser Arafat. In fact, he worked for the official Palestinian news agency when Arafat was leading the PLO. What about Bill Ayers, the terrorist, and his terrorist wife? Think of all the statements. Think of all the Jew hatred. Think of all the racist comments circulating in that particular crowd. Well, going back to this press conference from yesterday, here's what President Obama went on to say. This is clip 3.
I think what will happen with the president-elect is there are going to be certain elements of his temperament that will not serve him well unless he recognizes them and corrects them. Because when you're a candidate and you say something that is inaccurate or controversial, it has less impact than it does when you're president of the United States.
Yes, when you're president of the United States, you see, words matter. What you say as a president after the incident in Cambridge or Sanford or Ferguson or Baltimore, what you say, if it's controversial, You better be careful. You better look at your temperament. Words matter, and I agree with that. Who wouldn't? Coming from a leader in particular. But go back and look at even the recent history of this administration. And, of course, what I didn't play for you there in that clip was the media, the members of the media, and how that that was foremost on their minds. What about the temperament of this man that's going to replace you? I mean, you could just see it on their faces. You could hear it in the tone of their questions. They're frightened. It's Donald Trump that frightens them now. I want to take you back to the 60 Minutes interview. I played some excerpts from this yesterday, and the one on the race riots in particular, where the clip I played yesterday, Donald Trump was saying, look, he told Leslie Stahl of CBS, look, if this were the other way around and Hillary had won the election and then my supporters were out there protesting like what we've seen, it would be covered very differently. Oh, this is terrifying. But what I didn't play for you yesterday was then this exchange that followed that where let me just let the CBS report speak for itself. This is clip 4.
It has been 5 full days since the election, and anti-Trump demonstrations, driven in part by Hillary Clinton's edge in the popular vote, have been significant. When we interviewed him on Friday afternoon, Mr. Trump said he had not heard about some of the acts of violence that are popping up in his name or against his supporters. Nor, he said, had he heard about reports of racial slurs and personal threats against African Americans, Latinos, and gays by some of his supporters.
White power!
I'm very surprised to hear that.
You're telling Muslims.
I hate to hear that.
I mean, I hate
but
to hear
it. But you do hear it.
I don't hear it.
I saw one or two instances. On social media?
Well, I think it's a very small amount. Again, I think it's
the
media.
Do you want to say anything to those people?
I would say don't do it. That's terrible. Because I'm going to bring this country together.
They're harassing Latinos, Muslims.
I am so saddened to hear that. And I say stop it. If it helps, I will say this, and I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
That was from CBS 60 Minutes Sunday night. And think about what's happening as Leslie Stahl presses Donald Trump about his supporters for the last 5 days leading up to that interview. You have supporters of Hillary Clinton and supporters of Barack Obama rioting in the streets of Portland and Los Angeles. And Leslie Stahl wonders if Donald Trump is aware of any racist statements coming from his supporters. That is unbelievable. And how blind and biased it is. It's like something you'd read at the Onion. I mean, but this is not parody. Rioting in the streets of Portland. I think I said the other day, 29 people arrested for looting and burning. I think in L.A. it was 129 arrested. These are people protesting the election, a U.S. presidential election. And Leslie Stahl wonders about some statements on social media. Racial slurs aimed at African Americans and Latinos. That's the big issue. I'm sure those things are going on. What doesn't go on social media? But here again, rioting on the streets of the United States, and journalists that, even as they see cities burning, look at Donald Trump and his supporters, and all that they can see is that, well, he's the problem. Of course he's the problem. And it was the same kind of thing in the presser yesterday. Well, now tell me, President Obama, tell me about his temperament. Did you get into that with him? Are you still concerned about it? You were very concerned before the election. Isn't he still unstable? And the president, he contributes to the discussion, saying that, well, yeah, he's going to have to change his temperament. He's going to have to correct his behavior, or it's not going to serve him well. It's one thing to say inaccurate and controversial things in a campaign, but when you're president of the United States, that takes it to another level. Melanie Phillips has a piece at the Times today, or yesterday. It's her latest, saying that Trump's opponents are the bigots and the racists. This is Melanie Phillips boldly telling the truth. Where is the real racism and bigotry? And now, of course, as members of God's church, we've got to rise above both sides, because there's problems all the way through. The whole head is sick. But when you're getting this many lies and this kind of deception from a media that has certainly revealed its true colors. As I said last week, I mean, any ounce of credibility that it had going in, it's gone. But with all these lies and deception, you're just not going to get the truth anywhere. Except from God's work. And maybe a few lone journalists like Ms. Phillips here. She says if any evidence were needed of why Donald Trump won the White House, it's on display in the reaction to his election. American college students have demanded classes be canceled so they can cry over the threat Trump apparently poses to their sanity and well-being. This is the same student body that regularly mounts threatening protests against anyone who dares contradict progressive pieties. Liberal right, well, she goes and gives examples. What Thomas Friedman's saying at the New York Times: I'm in anguish. I feel homeless in America now that Donald Trump is going to be president. He has nowhere to go, Thomas Friedman. The very wealthy white journalist. Nowhere to go. Another one from the Brookings Institution. He's denounced the politics of resentment. And he's urging those protesting Trump to stay angry, to stay divided. You see, in their case, they're doing the right thing. The anger, the division, even the violence, it's justified on that side. Trump's victory, it is claimed, will promote hatred, racial violence, and an end to democracy. Melanie Phillips says, yet the people being hated and racially attacked are Trump supporters. So what's going on here? Where's the truth? And you can get the truth here because we're not a Clinton supporter or a Trump supporter. The only government that's going to solve the problems that we're facing is God's government. Set up and established at the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, headquartered in Jerusalem. That's what's coming. She goes, Melanie Phillips does, and gives these incidents. The individuals here beating up a middle-aged white man because he voted Trump. Happened in Chicago, happened in San Jose, happened in Los Angeles. The gal in Los Angeles, that protest, we played the soundbite last week. There will be casualties, she says. People are going to have to die. That's someone from the radical left saying that this is war and that there are going to be casualties. And, the reporters there jogging along with her, helping to amplify her message. We've got to get it out there, that rhetoric. Because that rhetoric, I mean, that's good rhetoric. That's anti-Trump rhetoric. And you're hearing it all over the place. And it's stirring up riotous behavior in places like Portland and Los Angeles. Melanie Phillips says, as for democracy, it's Trump's opponents who are now bringing it into doubt. On the foreign policy website, Jason Brennan wrote that voters are innately ignorant and uninformed. Democracy is the rule of the people, but the people are in many ways unfit to rule. They're just ignorant. They're stupid. She says it was the same thing after Brexit. The people that voted that we should leave Europe, they're stupid. They're dumb. They're ignorant. That's what they say about all the Trump supporters. And so where's the real bigotry here? That's the point she's making. Well, she talks about the double standard. And that, yes, Trump is a crude vulgarian. He is. But it's not like that's unusual. It's not like there haven't been liberal politicians who conduct themselves the same way. Again, this is Melanie Phillips' reasoning. And then he's leading the way to fascism in the United States. Melanie Phillips says, really? Fascism is a totalitarian slave doctrine that deifies the state and its leader, is obsessed with racial purification, and is hostile to modernity and reason. To tar Trump with this brush is to trivialize fascism to the point of denying what it is. He's said to be anti-immigrant and thus a racist. In fact, he's merely against illegal immigrants and thus for the rule of law. He's against illegal immigration. He's against breaking the law. And you got those from the radical left rising up saying, well, that's racism. Melanie Phillips says he's said to be anti-Muslim. In fact, he's against Islamist extremism and terrorism. He merely said, this goes back to his statement from last, November. He merely said Muslims should be stopped from coming to America until it worked out whether or not they had radical ties. Until we figure out what's going on. That's what he said last year. We've got to put a stop on it. We've got to halt the Muslim immigration until we figure out what we don't know their background. We don't know about the ones coming in from Syria. We've got to figure it out. Melanie Phillips says most grotesque of all is that he's said to be an anti-Semite. Trump has a Jewish son-in-law. His daughter is a Jewish convert. And he's a staunch friend to Israel and the Jews. Indeed, it won't be long before he's accused of being in the pocket of the Jewish or Zionist lobby. Those accusations will come as much from the left as the white supremacist groups who leached onto his campaign. His appointment of Steve Bannon as his chief strategist has provoked further uproar. This is because Bannon was head of the Breitbart News Network. Breitbart exposes Islamist violence and intimidation, and for that he's called a racist. Hate-fueled. Or rather, for that it is called racist, hate-fueled, and Islamophobic. Melanie Phillips says, millions of voters who fear Islamist oppression and oppose uncontrolled immigration have been denounced in exactly the same way. If you fear Islamist oppression or if you oppose uncontrolled immigration, then you must be a racist or an Islamophobe. And she's right. Look at the New York Times today. Look at the top three stories. I get the top three stories emailed to me every morning. And I didn't see the actual PDF of the front page, but I assume that this is above the fold because here's the first one. Critics see Stephen Bannon, Trump's pick for strategist, as voice of racism. That's the headline. Racism. It's in the headline. That's the way the New York Times views it. Well, it's obvious. And that's not angry or provocative rhetoric. I mean, the way the New York Times sees it, that's just the truth. Listen, he's a racist. He's a racist. The piece says, a fierce chorus of critics denounced President-elect Donald J. Trump on Monday for appointing Stephen K. Bannon, a nationalist media mogul, to a top White House position. Now, as Melanie Phillips brings out later, I'll probably read it here in a second. He certainly has given a voice to this nationalist populist movement in the United States. Mr. Bannon, that is, when he was over at Breitbart. And that movement's not going to solve the problems of the United States. And that movement itself has some problems. But to hear all of these lectures coming from the radical left, this will be a good time, by the way. I mentioned it yesterday, reading it over the weekend, my father's book. I gave you a quote earlier. Great again. What an eye-opening book and an important one to read, even as we see this transition, this what's looking to be a very rocky transition from President Obama to President Trump. But go back and get the overview. Get the big picture. Well, it's obvious. Trump's pick here, so many people see it as the voice of racism. By the way, another headline. This is one of the top three stories at the New York Times as well. Refugees discover two Americas, one that hates and one that heals. So which America do you suppose is the one that hates? Half of America or the other America hates? President-elect Trump's appointment is a racist. You don't even have to get to the first paragraph. The headline tells you all that you need to know. Here's another one. I don't know if this is on the front page of the New York Times. It was later on in the email. Another headline, though, attacks on Muslim Americans fuel increase in hate crime. Attacks, listen to this, and particularly given what's happening right now in the last 5 or 6 days, listen to this, attacks on Muslim Americans fuel increase in hate crime. That's just a small sampling of today's reading at the New York Times. Today's paper. Melanie Phillips continues, believing the smears they have created, the Trumpophobes then smear the public for voting for the man they have thus smeared. This, of course, is precisely why millions voted against the liberal establishment and for Trump, as well as for Brexit in the first place. Populism certainly has its dangers. Again, this is a Melanie Phillips has it right on here. She you read the entire article and she doesn't even come across as a big Trump fan. But she certainly sees what's happening. She sees what's happening on the radical left, on that side. She sees it. Populism certainly has its dangers. Lefties, however, believe that bad things can only happen on the right. That's what they believe, and you can see it. You can see it on 60 Minutes. You see it in the press conference yesterday. You see it in today's New York Times. They only believe that bad things happen on the right. They only believe that angry and dangerous rhetoric happens on the right. She says that's why they think Brexit must be a temporary derangement. That's why they deemed it impossible that Hillary Clinton could be more dangerous than Trump. Terrifyingly, here's the danger, the real danger. Terrifyingly, they are impervious to evidence. They will never acknowledge the bullying on campuses or of Christians, the anti-white racism of Black Lives Matter, the hatred expressed by liberals towards those they falsely accuse of hatred. She says the left's agenda is not to oppose bigotry or ignorance. It is to gain power and control. That's their objective. I mean, if their real agenda is to oppose bigotry or ignorance or added to that, the rioting, the dangers in the street. I mean, supposing there were Trump supporters out there in Portland or in Los Angeles, just letting go with all these racial slurs on the streets where these protests and riots were happening. And Trump, of course, is there saying, I mean, he's the one that comes forward. He has to make a confession. He has to come out and make a statement. And he said it on 60 Minutes. He said, stop. If there's anybody doing that, stop it. And, of course, that interview was recorded on Friday and not played until Sunday. And the riots were happening all weekend. And CBS, were they really, if that was the real motivation behind the riots, I mean, were they out there playing clips of Trump saying stop it? If their real interest here is to try to tone down the rhetoric and the hatred and to stop the violence, well, they just sat on it for 2 days. And then it finally did air on Sunday night. And speaking of that, Trump, that is, saying stop this. Stop it with the racial slurs. In anywhere along the way, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, when? And where did you hear, or when did you hear Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama come out and say, hey, listen up, protesters that are burning things, that are destroying things, that are destroying the city of Portland? Stop it. Put a stop to it now. The election is over. The American people have spoken. Accept what they've said. I don't know if we've heard that yet, coming from the radical left, have we? She makes the point here, Melanie Phillips, that their only objective is to gain power and control. They just can't possibly believe that anything bad would happen on the left. Even rioting, in their minds, even rioting is justified. You stay angry, the Brookings Institute says. You stay divided. You hit the streets. That's the message. It says here, for decades, liberals have stamped upon all opposition to the left's revolutionary attempt to remake society in its own image. The Brexit Trump uprising is the first time they've been defeated. See, that's why they're so upset and angry. And even there, I mentioned yesterday the Electoral College and how that Trump actually lost the popular vote. And as far as the racial breakdown, I mean, it was about the same as it was for Romney. And Barack Obama's the one that got millions more votes than Hillary Clinton. And he did get the minorities to turn out in droves. But he got tens of millions of whites. 67, 68, I think close to 70 million. From 4 or 8 years ago. I forget which one. In any event, they take a defeat, like they did with Brexit earlier this year or with Trump's win last week, and they get angry, and they turn violent, and they want to destroy cities. It says the left, I'll just finish it here, and again, it's a short article, but she makes so many good points, it's hard not to read most of it. She says the left falsely represent themselves as centrists, and true centrists are extremists. What's going on now is the people's counter-revolution, an attempt to move politics back to the true center of cultural gravity. Now, these are her conclusions on the politics of this. In fact, it's God who rules in the kingdom of men. In fact, and I think you can look at the numbers, now that they've all come in and he had such a convincing win in the Electoral College and yet lost in the popular vote, it's pretty clear to me that this was the man for the job. This was the one God wanted in there. In any event, she concludes here, the fact remains, though, that neither Trump, who has a track record as a social liberal, nor Theresa May, who has merely bowed to the will of the people to leave the EU, can be relied upon to do so. I mean, they're really not even that staunchly conservative. And yet there's just absolute panic. There's people on the left who are terrified, who are frightened at this move toward fascism. That's the way they see it. She says this is a culture war, and it's going to get more and more divided and bitter as we go. Well, we know where it's leading. God tells us. And we've gone through some of this before, but here again, you go back to the start of President Obama's presidency. Well, even before he was president. And what we were saying at thetrumpet.com, you can search it for yourself. There's quite a few articles from 2008 during that very angry and bitter and contentious election as well. But really, it was pretty one-sided. When you looked at the rhetoric, the words that were being said, and in particular the associations, the troubling associations, the mentors, the advisors. My father says poisonous race relations have everything to do with Bible prophecy. This was what we said in 2008, based upon the sure word of God. He said this dangerous buildup within our society is a racist bomb that most of us we'll see explode in our faces. That's really what we're seeing, the beginning stages of this explosion. And he went on to say that there's a lot of people, and there were a lot in 2008 that thought, well, if we could just get the black president in there, it's going to improve everything. And that actually happened. Before that happened, by the way, this is just to give you a little bit of an overview of the coverage. Before that happened, these same leftist media types were there warning. They were warning us, look, I don't think he's going to make it because there's too many whites who are racist. There's too many whites who just won't vote for him because he's black. And then he made it in. Lots of whites, as it turns out, did vote for him. And then there was that temporary moment. Everything looked like, boy, everything's going to get better. And Gallup poll comes out and 70% of Americans say, well, this is going to make things better. And here is where we are today, 8 years on. Bible prophecy tells us. It tells us that this is just a racist bomb that's about ready to explode. We were saying that in 2008. If you go back, way back, in fact, in the Plain Truth magazine, you see that Herbert Armstrong was talking about this back in the 1960s. He said it's coming. Race war is coming. And then he made this statement. Racial tensions, passions, and hatreds are being deliberately, note that word, deliberately, they're being deliberately stirred by organized planning. That's what's happening. It's happening right now. It's being deliberately stirred and organized. And so many of those, as Trump initially said, and then he backed away from it. They're professional protesters. They're being bussed in. They're being supported by MoveOn.org. It's a deliberate, organized attempt to cause division and strife in America's cities. They want that. They want to see an explosion. And that's what's going to happen. Mr. Armstrong said it will explode into mass violence that will stagger the imagination. It's going to stagger the imagination, the mass violence that's coming. Then in February 1965, Plain Truth Magazine, Mr. Armstrong said this, the prophecies reveal that this worldwide racial strife is going to intensify in the years ahead. He was right on with it. It's going to intensify. According to the prophecies of God's word, racial conflicts and virtual annihilation of certain peoples is destined yet to occur. I mean, we've seen it before, he said. We saw it in World War II. Human nature is the same. In fact, it's worse. Paul said that in 2 Timothy 3. Evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse and worse. Right at the end time. Right up to the end of this age. Well, let me just look at one prophecy here. We've gone through Isaiah 1 before. I alluded to it a moment ago about the sickness. And here's what it says, Isaiah 1 and verse 4. The prophet writes, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers," it says, "children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." It says, why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head, it says, the whole head is sick. And the whole heart is faint. We're talking about a sickness from head to toe. It's through and through. There's no recovering from this. He says in verse 6, from the sole of the foot, even under the head, there's no soundness. There's just wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Look at what God is saying here through the prophet Isaiah. Here are the governments in Israel. That's primarily the United States and Britain. There's a sickness there. There's a sickness there. And even the ones that seemingly come from the conservative wing, like Melanie Phillips brings out. I mean, look, the record there, for the most part, is just a social liberal. And yet the movement, this movement to divide and conquer is so strong that you have this organized, deliberate effort to bring the whole system down. To bring down our cities, to bring our cities to their knees. Yet the prophet says here, the government's heart, the leader's heart, is just too faint or weak to really solve the problems. That's the forecast that we can give to you for the Trump administration. It may appear that he's going to come in and lead a resurgence and make America great again. But like my father says in the Great Again booklet, it's a mirage. It will soon fade away. Sad to say. My father says there at the outset, I mean, I'd like to see that happen. Who wouldn't? As an American, as anyone on earth today, who wouldn't want to see a great America? Well, a lot of America's enemies, of course, wouldn't want that, but you get the point. My father says, I'd love to see it turn around. But I've got to tell you, what God's prophecies say. Prophecies like here in Isaiah 1. Verse 7 says, your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers, devour it in your presence. And it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers. These are prophecies for our day today. They're for us. It's talking about cities being burned. It's talking about desolation. It's talking about massive rioting. And then God goes on and says, look, the problem was with the people, all of them, all of the races. Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like Gomorrah, verse 9 says. Hear the word of God, you rulers of Sodom. That's what God compares our society to. And that's why we better be grounded in these prophecies and study them and heed them and really look at ourselves. Now is as good a time as any to get hold of that new booklet, Great Again, particularly chapter 5. I think that's the last chapter in the book. There might be an afterword at the end, but chapter 5 is where America's race riots are leading, and even earlier in the book, so much powerful and profound information there in chapter 2 about the origins of America's dangerous turn left. You go back and see where it all started. You go back all the way to Mr. Armstrong, even from the 1950s and 60s, when he was talking about this movement. Organized and deliberate to bring it all crashing down. Well, there is hope. There is hope, and my father has that throughout the Great Again booklet. America, Britain, they are going to be great again at the return of Jesus Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and this is all the time that we have left for today. One segment, sorry about that. You can email the program at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.